Drink up, baby. Fantasy Football Happy Hour is here to get you wins and have some laughs. Matthew Berry here, and my podcast, Fantasy Football Happy Hour, has the sleepers, busts, and starts and advice you need to win your league. We're diving into the tape, we're crunching the numbers to bring you sleepers, busts, weekly starts and advice. Whether you're defending a title or desperately avoiding last place, I've got you covered every single weekday. The bar is open. It's Fantasy Football Happy Hour with Matthew Berry, wherever you get your podcasts.
Dirt and Sprague continues.
I think I'm becoming lactose intolerant. Is that possible?
It's breakfast time with Dirt and Sprague.
Dude, I could choke down six of those easily.
Dirt and Sprague.
Eggs, breakfast, and go whoop ass.
On the Fan Sports Network.
Hey, welcome back in. Hour two. Hello. Dirt and Sprague here on 105.1 The Fan and the Fan Sports Network. Good morning. Happy Tuesday. It is a Mail Sack Tuesday, so get those Mail Sack questions in at 503-864-6326.
Mail Sack.
And we'll get to that in the final hour. We'll talk about the Shaedon Sharpe injury. We touched on that in the first hour. We'll get back into it in the third. One pundit saying, I don't buy this about our Portland Trailblazers.
Ooh, what could it be?
We got college football and NFL football all over the show notes today, so there's a lot to talk about in that regard.
Who's eligible? Who's not eligible? Your guess is as good as mine.
I actually don't want to talk about that at all. Can you pivot to literally anything else?
It's a little impactful for me.
Why?
Does Indiana have two defensive linemen that were part of their championship team on their roster this year?
You don't play them.
Not yet.
Well, you might not play them at all.
We might not. You never
worry
know.
About an opponent. You know you're on the schedule.
They're a boogeyman.
Yeah, they are the boogeyman. I don't blame you for that. So we'll get some college football notes, and we roll on with the dirty poll. The number nine team in all of the land. Who will it be? We will find out in about 20 minutes or so. But let's step into the cafe. Good morning. Hello. Thanks for hopping in with us. We always appreciate you guys hanging out with us here on The Fan and the Fan Sports Network.
It's going to be a Bloody Mary kind of morning.
Is it?
Yeah. Shaedon Sharpe down. Bummed about that.
You know what's funny?
Mm.
I literally put on my menu today, Bloody Mary.
Yeah, we need one.
And the protein specials.
Yeah, that's what we need.
So we have an entire menu of protein items. You can do a protein yogurt. We're going to have protein pancake, French toast, waffle. And then you got a protein smorgasbord of breakfast options below that.
I like that idea. We need a little booze in our breakfast this morning.
Get a little boozy, and let's get a little beefy.
Maybe a shot of tequila, too, while we're at it.
Yeah, we can do all those things, really. Step into the cafe, and we start with last night.
Fly ball, right field, Harper can't make the catch. It's a three-homer game,
Aaron Goldsmith, Mariners TV, somebody break up the Mariners.
Here they go.
They've won three of their last four games. I had to do the math there.
Yes,
Cal
they
Raleigh
have.
With three dingers yesterday.
How about those Mariners?
He's got four homers in his last four games, Dirt. Is he back?
I mean, look, it's a storyline if I were a Mariner fan that I would be super intrigued by because he's had such a bad year that any sign of life you're going to be desperate to go see. I need a larger sample size than a week from a hitter in order to believe that he can get back to being the fearsome guy in the lineup that he was. Not that he's going to be what he was last year, but just can he be a bat that does that? Can he win you a game once a week just hitting a couple of bombs? Like, he did that for them all season last year, and it was a big reason why they went as far as they did. They're still six games below 500, but the benefit of them is that they're, what, three games I want to see out of the division, a couple games out of the last wild card spot, so they're very much alive in the playoff race. And they've done what they've needed to do through this tough stretch of their schedule. They go against Milwaukee. You're able to get a series win. The Phillies come in red hot. You take game one of that, so now you got a chance to win a series against Milwaukee and Philly back-to-back. And then in September, the schedule's up for you. So they have survived and not cratered against this hard stretch of their schedule. And now you get an ease up in September. But as we know with the Mariners, nothing is guaranteed in terms of wins and losses.
Well, didn't they do this last time? He had that grand slam, you remember? And everybody's like, oh, my God,
he's
this
back.
Is it.
Yeah.
And then I think he went like six games without a home run.
Yes.
So I
just need a bigger set.
Good
was
night
awesome.
For him. Good night for him.
He's up to 17 home runs, so he's going to hit the. He's going to get to 20 probably this year, and so it won't be 60 home runs to 11. So that's good news.
Yeah,
because that's still eye popping. Not that 60 to 22 isn't still eye popping, but nice for like dude. That guy's probably going through it mentally all year. I love Cal Raleigh, so it was nice to see him have a moment. Last night.
I would also like to add, despite what everybody thinks, I'm a Mariner fan right now.
Oh.
They're playing the Phillies.
Yes, they are.
So take care of the Phillies. Appreciate that.
Order up. Need an out.
And right back at her. How about two? Are you kidding me? That ends it. Kinley Rasmus to the rescue.
Carl Ravitch, ESPN, Little League World Series. One of the stories so far of the Little League World Series is that young lady, Kinley Rasmus of Phenix City, Alabama, who got the game tying run for her team and then also ended the game on a double play. Nice story. It's a great story. It's why I wanted to highlight it. Also should be noted, today at noon, if you so choose.
Yeah, what do we got?
Double elimination right now.
Ooh.
Phoenix City's 2-1, taking on Tacoma, who's 2-1. So she's got a chance to eliminate our Tacoma baseball team.
The Tecompton Little League baseball team coming to town.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, they're not coming to town.
No,
they left
they're in
town.
The, they're Williamsport.
Yeah, they went to the East Coast.
When
actually.
Did we get the? Did we already get the Little League Major League game? Did that already happen?
Or yeah, the Braves and Brewers.
Oh, that was on Sunday night.
Okay. They had a little good game line at the end of it.
That's kind of cute. You got to do something like that. You know, let the kids have a good time with it.
It's not bad.
Yeah.
Do you believe in day olds?
Day olds?
Yeah, like you ever go to a coffee shop, see day old pastries?
Like, do I eat them? Do I believe in them? I mean, they are a real thing. I believe they're on the counter. I won't refuse to eat one. You know me. I dropped a bagel
well,
once.
You don't like pastries. That's
no.
So I'm asking if you believe in them.
I mean, I could do a croissant every now and then. That's
a what?
That's a croissant.
Oh, okay.
I could do one of those.
Croissant.
Like, I dropped a bagel in the parking lot and ate it one time. So, yeah, the day old thing does not scare me away in any way, shape, or
well,
form.
Well, I asked you about the day olds. That was the longest answer you could have said yes or no to. I asked you about day olds because there was something I didn't get to yesterday in the cafe, and we've packaged it as a day old.
Order up! Been listening to you for a long time, and it's a pleasure to share this last one with you.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure sharing with you, too. I appreciate it.
How's it going, guys?
I do want to say before we get out of here, Carl, I got to say congratulations and thank you. Congratulations on playing some more golf, and thank you for the 30 years, man. You were a staple in my living room for 30 years watching ESPN. You made it fun to watch ESPN, so I just want to say thank you for everything
you
did, man. It was awesome.
You're
one of the good ones. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
So that was from the weekend. I didn't get to it yesterday. That was Chris Sale and Garrett Mitchell, the Brewers-Braves Little League game. And I wanted to play that because I think a lot of us, like, there's names we're all going to remember in sports media.
Mm-hmm.
And there's going to be so many more that you hear and you'll go, oh, yeah, I love that person. You know, mine for me was when we found out Mike Patrick died.
Yeah, that one hurt.
I loved Mike Patrick and Joe Theismann on Sunday Night Football. I loved him on ACC Dick Vitale basketball games. He was one of my favorite broadcasters that never got quite the recognition of some of his peers.
Yes.
Carl Ravitch is absolutely one of these people that has put in a lot of work, done a great job, and I wanted to play it because I think it's cool that even pro athletes that grew up watching him are giving him the love and wishing him well on his next endeavors.
I mean, how many guys have been a bigger staple in terms of broadcasting in Major League Baseball over the last 30 years? Right, like you have your team-by-team specific examples where broadcasters, play-by-play guys for that team has been, like John Miller for the Giants, been doing it forever,
right,
that kind of
right,
stuff.
Right.
But from a national voice standpoint, like, Joe Buck would have been the other one, but when was the last time Joe Buck doesn't call baseball anymore?
Well, but also, like, Joe Buck is such a huge name. I'm talking about that next level
sure,
of broadcasters.
The next rung down the ladder.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've always appreciated Carl Ravitch. The way his end of his run came at ESPN was unfortunate. The idea of, like, he was contracted out but still working, but he got fired and everybody's news. That whole thing was very weird. So it was cool to see those players pay honor to him on Sunday.
Order up!
I don't think people are bracing for how low the floor could get in Portland this year, just because of all the weirdness surrounding that franchise, the clunky fit of the roster.
That is Andrew Sharp. Sorry, I was looking at something else, and I forgot that's a 10-second clip. We'll get to more of what he said. He had some interesting thoughts, and Blazer fans hot and bothered in the comment section by Andrew Sharp of the Ben Golliver GOAT podcast.
Yes.
Greatest of all talk. Giving his thoughts. This was taped before the Shaden news came out, and just says, you know, it's a interesting setup going into the season for the Trailblazers. The Shaden Sharp news came along yesterday, torn meniscus in his right knee, and sidelined at least 6 months. Many people think it's going to be longer than that.
Yeah, look, the news is unfortunate. It's devastating for Blazer fans who were still hopeful that Shaden can turn into something, or maybe this was going to be the year that he popped. We've done that a lot with him, but maybe this was going to be a good year for him. You can feel however you want to feel about the Blazers and there are too many guards in the lineup or too many centers on the floor? How does the roster fit together and that be the downfall of them? I don't like using all the weirdness around the organization as an excuse for their success. Do we remember what happened on opening night last year?
Yeah.
The head coach of the team...
We let the chips fall where they may.
...got arrested by the FBI after the opening game of the year.
Yeah.
Everybody found out at 4-something in the morning. It dominated the airwaves on our station for 24 hours.
Yeah, a little
the players,
longer than
that, players got random phone calls and texts. By the way, don't reach out to Chauncey. He's in federal prison right now.
Yep.
And they ended up hitting the over and going to the playoffs. So, like, this idea that Tom Dundon being cheap and going through this stuff off the floor is going to impact the way that they play... I don't buy into that. If you got issues with the way the roster's built, totally fair, and I'm right there with you. The Dundon stuff will not affect off the court, will not affect winning and losing.
Order up!
The talk in the locker room from the media or the fans is not about football. And so whether it's Kyle Shanahan's car accident or Brandon Ayuk doing something wacky in a car or Jed York, the owner, getting arrested for prostitution, they hate that type of distraction. And the players don't want it because now the players are going to be called into a meeting today. If they haven't already, and they're going to be briefed, hey, tomorrow practice is open. You're going to have all sorts of reporters here locally and nationally asking not about the Raiders preseason game or the Rams game one in Melbourne, Australia, but instead, do you have a comment about your owner? And they're all going to say, nah, that's not in my purview. So it's a distraction, and you don't want distractions.
That's Raj Matai on our sister station, 95.7 The Game. He works for NBC Sports Bay Area. And that's what I was saying earlier, Dirt, for those that missed it, of I think you are right. I think a lot of guys are going to joke and be like, dude, only $140 for a prostitute. You're the NFL owner. But he's not wrong in the sense of, like, the last thing I think you want is guys being distracted by conversations. I don't know how distracted they're going to be, but that's his thoughts on Jed York being arrested for the prostitution sting in East Palestine, Ohio.
I mean, I see the argument. I do. I also, like, you try and put yourself in the position of a player, and you just got done with practice, and somebody asks you, hey, how weird is it that your owner hired a hooker, and you just say, I have no comment on that, and then you move on. Like, is that really that big of a distraction? I'm sure it's creating a lot of fodder behind the scenes. The best news for them is that they play right out of the gate in week one. You get that Thursday night game, which we're... little over 2 weeks away from, right? I mean, it's almost here. And so by the time you kick off in Australia against the Rams, if you win that opening game, and you've had a lot of success against the Rams over the years, it's been a good matchup for Kyle Shanahan. If you win that game, is the talking point or focus of the organization going to be on Jed York and what he did in East Palestine, Ohio? Or is it going to be on, man, maybe we should give the Niners more credit. The Rams were the heavy favorite to win the Super Bowl. They just beat them on night one in Australia. Like, it changes the narrative quickly. So I see the point. They are going to have to answer questions on it. I give pro athletes a little more credit than that I don't think it's going to be quite the distraction that people are making it out to be. And this is also an organization that I feel like has dealt with. They've had to answer questions about a substation for like 3 years and if the electrical currents next door are making more of their players get hurt. So they've been through this before.
I don't trust Google AI as far as I can throw it.
Yeah.
It's telling me Robert Kraft did not receive any official punishment or suspension from the NFL following the prostitution
That's
sting
correct
in Florida.
Because the initial
charges
got dropped because the search of the video was deemed illegal. It was an improper search, so they couldn't use it as evidence, so they dropped the charges.
So this is probably going to be a little different, right?
They already lowered his charges, though, too, from when he was originally arrested, Jed York, to when they released him.
Yeah,
because it was soliciting prostitution, and then it was down to, like, disorderly conduct.
Well, you always plead no contest.
But he pled no contest and paid a fine, so...
So is he going to get punished?
That's the big mystery.
What do you punish this guy?
I also just laugh at owner punishments.
It'd be really funny if you punished him $140.
He can't sit in a suite for a month? Oh, no.
They wouldn't go that far. It'd be something really dumb.
Except my whole point being...
$20,000. Like,
right.
What?
Okay. He's got the money to do it, and if you don't let him sit in a suite, he's just going to watch the game in his mansion at home. The idea of punishing an owner is always laughable to me.
Order up!
This is a team that I don't know if they really... are fueled by that kind of stuff. Certainly the previous Seahawks Super Bowl team, when you talk about the Legion of Boom era guys, they absolutely would have fed off of something like that. I think this team is a little different in that regard. Not quite the same chip on the shoulder types of attitude in this locker room compared to that one, but they definitely have taken notice of the fact that, you know, the Rams have gotten a lot of the attention.
There's Brady Henderson on ESPN Radio, our good friend with the Seahawks don't really play up the everybody's betting against us chip on the shoulder thing the way Legion of Boom does, but they've noted that it's real Ram noisy right now. And so weirdly, they come in the defending champions. We already knew they were going to have a target on the back, but they're kind of coming in with this, like, and you could even use my own opinion. I'm taking the field. I don't think we're going to get a back-to-back Super Bowl champion. It just happens so rarely that weirdly you get to kind of come into a season with almost like less pressure than other sports. Would you say it's less pressure than baseball, basketball?
Agree completely, yeah. Because once you get one, it changes the narrative about everybody in the organization. And also, I just don't think there's the expectation from fans. At least there isn't from me.
I think, like, Seahawks fan thinks their team can do it
again. Can do it, sure. But you're not going to say Super Bowl or bust this year.
No.
You know who's Super Bowl or bust? The Rams are Super Bowl or bust. Anything short of a Super Bowl.
The Bills feel a little Super Bowl or bust.
Like, if you don't win,
feel a little Super Bowl or bust.
If the Seahawks have a good year, you make the playoffs. Maybe you don't win the division, but you get to the divisional round. You lose a field goal game to, I don't know, the Packers, whatever team you want to throw out there.
Right.
You're like, what a disappointing year. You're going to say, we're good. We're still knocking on the door. Yep. And next year, maybe the ball bounces our way. We win that one score game and we would have gone on to win the Super Bowl. I don't think that shouldn't be at least the expectation, that or bust. They're going to have a shot at it. And if anybody wanted to make a gripe, they got a pretty strong argument about not getting picked.
Order up.
Yeah. He reminds me of a very specific player. Release, size, shiftiness, running ability. Like, he is a carbon copy for me. You know, I always do this. I'm always going to compare someone to someone because somebody that I've seen recently, an SEC quarterback that reminds me exactly of him. Any guesses?
I don't know. I'm drawing a blank at this point because when you mentioned Bryce Young, I'd actually looked. And I was like, okay, what did Bryce Young do in that little bit that first year?
It's Jaden Daniels. It's exactly who it is. It's tall. It's skinny. It's fast. His release is quick.
Flick of the wrist.
I'm telling you, y'all are going to watch this. Just remember that he looks. Now, he might not get his number retired, but like he looks like Daniels. And he's got some of that.
Nice little line there. David Pollack on his David Pollack football podcast. I don't know the name of his podcast.
I don't remember it either.
Probably just the David Pollack show. He is comparing Keelon Russell, the now-named starting quarterback of the Alabama Crimson Tide, says he is going to remind all of us of Jaden Daniels. That's an interesting comp because Daniels may not have won the Heisman at ASU, but he kind of burst onto the scene.
Mm-hmm.
And then he transferred in the middle of the night. We thought, okay, good luck. And then he won the starting gig at LSU and then won the Heisman. And, you know, he became the number two pick. So, fascinating comp for Keelon Russell of Jaden Daniels.
C-Ball, Get Ball, good name of the pod. That's a solid pod name.
C-Ball, Get Ball,
C-Ball, Get Ball is a good pod name.
That is a good name.
Talk about lofty expectations. The two names that I've heard referenced with this kid, one is the quote you just heard, Jaden Daniels.
Yep.
The other one from yesterday when he won the job, somebody was asked what he reminds them of inside the Tennessee program, and he said he's like trying to tackle Lamar Jackson.
You mean the Alabama program?
Alabama. Oh, sorry. We're talking Keelon Russell here? Sorry.
Keelon Russell.
I thought you were talking about the Tennessee kid. My apologies.
No. So that kid is comp to... You said Lamar.
That kid got comped to Lamar Jackson.
So we got Lamar and Jaden Daniels in the SEC.
It's like trying to tackle Lamar Jackson. So that's a hell of a 1-2 punch for young quarterbacks in the SEC. The expectations are certainly sky high, and they're both rosters where, like, if you get good quarterback play, you could go on a run this year. Tennessee's got a lot of really good players. Their defense should be solid this year. In Alabama, we know what they're at the wide receiver position. I think their defensive line will be a little bit better this year. And so if you just get above-the-line play from those two young quarterbacks, maybe you're looking at teams that could go on runs. But also, when you have freshman quarterback or young players at the position, it could also sink your hopes.
Oregon State's named their starting quarterback. We'll get to that today. Dirt and Sprague, we're back with the Dirty Poll. It rolls on. We step out of the cafe. The Dirty Poll, number 9 team, according to one Andy Dirt Johnson. We'll tell you who it is with the preview coming up next on 105.1 The Fan.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back in. We roll on with the Dirty Poll. We're on to number 9.
The top 10 are upon us.
Yes, we've got LSU, Texas Tech, and yesterday BYU.
Yes, we do.
The number 9 team in all the land, according to one Anteater Johnson going into the year. The Oklahoma Sooners.
Boomer Sooner, Boomer Sooner.
We're getting Parker Thune on. He's going to join us coming up. He covers them for On3, Coast of the Boz podcast, and 12-3 on KREF Sports. Also a Heisman Trophy voter.
Pretty jealous of that, man. That'd be pretty cool. I'd love to be a Heisman Trophy voter.
How the hell do you get a Heisman Trophy vote?
I don't know.
I tried to get you an AP Top 25 vote. I never heard back.
I'm not going to lie to you. If that ever happened to me, it'd probably be the crowning achievement of my career. You know how seriously I would take that.
Where would that rank of gifts given? Because that was going to be a Christmas gift for you.
Top 3.
Top 3?
Easily top 3.
Wow, okay.
I mean, I've gotten cool stuff. Ain't nothing cooler. I mean, top 3. Heisman Trophy, if you gave that. Ian Furness has a Heisman Trophy vote. I've never asked him how he got it or how they decided it.
Well, he works for TV stations, too.
I know, it's a TV thing. I was on his show a couple of years ago, and he was asking me to sell him the case. I think it was the Bo Nix Penix years before the Pac-12 championship game, so to take age terribly.
Who should get the
And it was like, sell me on Bo Nix. I'm like, you got it, buddy. That ain't hard for me, man. I'll fire away from him.
Well, let's talk to Parker Thune right now here. Oklahoma, number 9 in the Dirty Poll. They got a lot of expectation. Venables just got the extension. They've got their quarterback back. They got Michigan, Georgia, 2 in their first 4 games. A lot to discuss as the Oklahoma Sooners come in at number 9. Parker, thanks for hopping on with us this morning. We appreciate it. Let's go back to something really random. Mm. How and when did you get your Heisman Trophy vote?
Ooh. Oh, my goodness. I am almost never asked this question. And it's been, gosh, it's been 4 years, I think. So basically the way that it works is the Heisman Committee, there's a fixed number of voters. And I can't recall offhand what the exact number is. It's like 600-something voters, but the number never changes. And so it's always the same number. And so you have to get an invite. There's a regional coordinator for each region across the country that coordinates where the Heisman votes go, who gets them. And essentially what has to happen is somebody has to either retire or leave the industry for a vote to open up. Hmm. And then once that vote opens up, the regional coordinator selects a new media member to receive a Heisman Trophy vote. So I got that call back in the summer of 2022, I believe it was, because, yeah, Caleb Williams of USC was my first Heisman Trophy vote that 2022 season. So it is an invite-only fraternity.
Fascinating.
We're talking to the coolest guy in the world then, because he got the invite.
That's badass, dude. Now, do you remember, did you vote for the winner every year, or have you had a year where you disagreed and you had somebody else at number one?
Yeah, no, so 2024, I was an Ashton Gentry guy. I voted for Ashton Gentry over Travis Hunter.
Good for you. Yeah. I think a lot of people out here would appreciate that. Parker Thune, our guest here, on 3, Oklahoma Sooners coming in at number 9. We talked about the Venables extension. I kind of just viewed it as like getting ahead and rewarding your own guy. Made the playoff last year. I know they lost at home and blew the lead, but made the playoff, and I think people are relatively happy so far. You'd have to fill us in on that, but I just viewed it as taking care of your own and getting way ahead of stuff, because we talked to a BYU guy yesterday, and he said Kalani Sitake was 99% out and going to Penn State until they rushed in and promised everything. So I viewed it more of like their program taking care of their own. What are the thoughts of Brent Venables for Oklahoma fan, and your thoughts on the extension?
Yeah, so what you got to understand in the backdrop of Oklahoma extending Venables is, I mean, this fan base collectively had a conniption when Lincoln Riley bailed on them for USC in the fall of 2021, because that's the type of thing that doesn't happen at Oklahoma. Historically, I mean, the head football coach in a blue blood program like Oklahoma isn't leaving for another college job. You factor in all of the comments that Riley had made in the weeks and months leading up to that decision about how content he was at Oklahoma and how he had no desire to go anywhere else. People felt betrayed. People felt bamboozled. And so the people of the state of Oklahoma and within the OU football fan base, they value loyalty. And I think what they recognize in Brent Venables is they have a guy who's loyal to Oklahoma, the athletic director, the new AD, Roger Denny, who's only been on the scene since February when he took over from decorated longtime AD Joe Castiglione. He recognizes that as well. And I think there's an understanding right now that have Venables' first 4 seasons kind of been marked by some ups and downs? Absolutely. But there's a confidence right now within the walls of the Switzer Center, the administrative building in Oklahoma, that, hey, this thing is headed in the right direction. And between Venables and Jim Nagy, the general manager, there's a lockstep. There's a shared vision. There's a mutual vision for where Oklahoma needs to go and how they're going to get there. And I think there's a lot of confidence in the leaders that are in place at OU. And so if that's the level of confidence that you have in Venables and the whole operation at Oklahoma, I think Denny's mindset, I think the administration's collective mindset at Oklahoma is, let's make sure that we have these key figures, i.e. Venables and Nagy most specifically, locked down for the long term. And so that was kind of the goal behind the extension. It keeps them under contract through 2031, which is almost exactly concurrent with the duration of Nagy's contract. And as Denny said last week, you know, you're not making this decision. You're not signing this extension with Coach Venables if you're anticipating having to fire him or having to pay a buyout one day. And even, you know, look, that may happen. Unforeseen things happen in college football all the time. And so the leadership will be ready to react to that, obviously, in a place like OU if things do take a turn for the worse. But that's certainly not the expectation. And I think there's a belief within that building that Oklahoma is in as strong of a place as a football program with regard to the years ahead as they have been in some time.
Yeah, it makes sense when you explain it that way. You look at the schedule this year, and out of the gate, it's just brutal, man. You get Michigan on the road in week two, Texas, Georgia combined in there as well. Like, the offense is going to have to get better for them. I think there's just a base level understanding going into the year. Like, Venables, the defensive guy, they got studs on that side of the ball. They were awesome last year. They're going to be great. But this past season, they also struggled at times to run the football. I know they have a stud at left tackle. Where is the feeling on the offense and where they're at and Mateer's thumb, you know, health, all of that coming together and the offense being a little more explosive this season?
Yeah, I think here's the thing, guys. All offseason, I've fielded questions about what the offense is going to be like at Oklahoma. You know, how effective can that unit be? How effective can John Mateer be? And kind of the answer, the stock answer that I always give is, John Mateer just kind of needs to be a B-plus quarterback in order for Oklahoma to get where they want to go. He had a spectacular first four games of last season. He was the front runner for the Heisman Trophy. People forget, before that thumb injury against Auburn, he was the front runner in Vegas for the Heisman Trophy at that point through the first third of the season. And so he doesn't even necessarily need to be on that level with how strong and how deep Oklahoma's defense is. He just kind of has to be the guy that can manage the game, mitigate risk, keep the ball out of harm's way, trust his offensive line, trust the run game, and he's the type of player that will make an occasional wow play, whether with his legs or with his arm, but he doesn't need to be a superhero the way that Oklahoma quarterbacks of years gone by have needed to in order to elevate this team to championship contention. You think about the Swiss cheese defenses that Baker Mayfield and Kyler Murray and Jalen Hurts and Caleb Williams were playing opposite, right? Like, that's not who John Mateer needs to be. And I think there's an understanding in his mind that, you know, I don't have to do everything for this football program. I don't have to single-handedly lift them to championship contender status. And so offensively, they really beefed up the skill positions, made key additions at wide receiver with Trell Harris from Virginia and Parker Livingston from Texas, brought in three transfer tight ends, Hayden Hansen, who's a 30-plus game SEC starter from Florida, Jack Van Dorseler from Tennessee, who played quite a bit for them as a true freshman last year, and then a guy that probably has the coolest name in all of college football, Rocky Beers from Colorado State. So that's a fun unit. Their backfield is deep. They bring back a couple of proven SEC guys in Torrey Blaylock and Xavier Robinson. I think the guy that's actually on track to start week one is another Colorado State transfer in Lloyd Avant, who's just kind of shown up and stacked days and blown everyone away. Their offensive line, they're bringing back four of five starters, and the fifth guy is an Arkansas transfer by the name of Emarion Harris, who has 20-plus SEC starts under his belt as well. So there's a lot of experience all around on this offense, and I think that's where the confidence lies, especially with Mateer as the trigger man, is you just have a bunch of guys across that unit. Every single one of those 11 guys that are going to trot out there with the first team in all likelihood in week one have just played a ton of college football.
Dumb question, maybe. I feel like I should know the answer to this. Is Rocky Beers the brother of Reagan Beers, the women's basketball player?
Yes, matter of fact.
Okay.
He is.
Good to know. I knew she had a tie. I couldn't remember what it was, and then you said that name, and it just rang a bell because she used to be an Oregon State Beaver once upon a time. Parker Thune, our guest here on 3, covering Oklahoma, co-host of the Boz Podcast, and 12 to 3 on KREF. And as we noted earlier, the coolest guy on the show right now because he got the Heisman invite, and my co-host Andy Der Johnson didn't. He has to create his own poll to even be relevant in the sport. Nobody cares about him.
That's all I got.
Very easy one for you. Is Brent Venables the guy that can get Oklahoma to the mountaintop?
I believe so. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that Brent Venables is the best defensive mind in college football. And I don't think you would get a whole lot of argument in that regard nationally. You could make a case for a few other guys, but I think when you look at the track record, just continually, year over year, what Venables has done in the past at Kansas State, at Oklahoma, at Clemson, both as a DC and now as a head coach, the units that he's produced time and again, I think you'll hear testimony from offensive coaches across the sport. There's nobody they hate going up against more than Brent Venables because his whole scheme is so chaotic and never gives you looks that you can expect, looks that you can figure out. It's so confusing the way that he calls defense and requires a lot cognitively from his players, but that makes it incredibly difficult for opponents to handle. So when you combine that with some of the able to recruit in recent years, what you're seeing will circle here in 2026 is a defensive unit that can absolutely be among the three or five best in the country. And then it's just a question of how quickly can you get the offense to a place where it's capable of shouldering the load that's required of it in order to push Oklahoma to that national championship conversation. And they're fortunate. You know, they landed on a former Washington State Cougar in Ben Arbuckle. Had a couple years as OC up there with Cam Ward and with Mateer there in 2024. Made the transition to OU in 2025. And he seems like a guy, you know, he's from Canadian, Texas, which is only about 3 hours outside of Norman. He seems like a guy that's in it for the long-ish haul at Oklahoma. He's a guy that at 30 years of age is going to be a head coach at some point in time, but he also doesn't have to rush it because of how young he is. His wife's a longtime OU fan, very content living in the state of Oklahoma, very content with the job and the salary that he's got. So as long as they're able to keep him around as kind of the offensive mastermind, then I think it's altogether reasonable to expect that Oklahoma within the next 2 or 3 years can't be competing for a national championship. It takes a lot to win one, especially these days when you have to navigate the 12-team playoff and all of the challenges that are kind of baked into the pie within that postseason format. But Oklahoma can get there under Venables. There's no doubt.
Now, I'm a little petty. Last one I got for you. I love rooting against coaches who leave my alma mater. Like, it was hard seeing Mario Cristobal get to a national championship last year, but the years before that had been quite delightful because he'd underwhelmed. Willie Taggart got fired right away. So I'm one of those kind of fans. How have the people in Norman felt watching all of the things transpire in Southern California and Lincoln Riley still without a playoff win?
I think they feel very, very content with how it's all gone, mostly because, I mean, your hope, right, if you're a really petty Oklahoma football fan, I would submit that your hope isn't that Lincoln Riley gets fired 3 or 4 years in and walks away with a $50 million buyout. No, you want him to be stuck in a position where USC is just successful enough that his job security is never seriously called into question, but never successful enough that USC is actually relevant nationally in college football, which is kind of where they've been the last couple of years, right? Like, you want Lincoln Riley, if you're a truly petty Oklahoma football fan, you want Lincoln Riley winning 7 games at USC for the entirety of that 10-year contract or whatever it was that he signed. So all things considered, it's going just about as well, just about as swimmingly as the petty Oklahoma fan could have hoped.
Parker, really good preview, really good stuff. The one thing you wish the state of Oklahoma had that it doesn't?
Oh, my goodness. That's a great question.
I know.
Oh, God.
That's all we do here. Give us a Heisman vote.
Yeah, come on.
Come on, Parker. Let us
come
in the cup, man.
Come on.
We're good hang.
Recommend man, us.
Okay, here you go. Here you go. How about this?
Okay.
How about this? See, I grew up in the state of Nebraska.
Oh.
I'm not an Oklahoma local. Okay. So I grew up in Nebraska, spent my whole childhood, adolescent years there growing up. You know what the state of Nebraska has and the whole Midwest has that I kind of wish were the case here in Oklahoma? Because in the South, in the Mid-South, like, they talk about it and they act like it's the premier thing, but it's certainly not as good down here as it is up in the Midwest. And that is a good steak. You know, you go sit down, you have a good steak at a steakhouse. In Nebraska, man, and in all those surrounding Midwest states, the quality of the steak that you will get up there blows away what you can get anywhere else.
Really?
I'll stand by that.
Wow.
Really? Nebraska with the best steak,
wouldn't
huh?
have thought that. Would That's have just a good assumed, steak, man.
You guys ever heard of Omaha Steak?
Yeah, I mean, Omaha Steaks, yeah.
I also know Texas is below Oklahoma.
People order them from all over the country.
Yeah. You know, I know Texas has got good steak, too.
It's decent.
Yeah. It's decent.
It's not an Omaha steak.
Parker Thune covering Oklahoma for On 3, Coast of the Boz podcast. Find him on social media and 12 to 3 on KREF. Thank you for the preview. Great to catch up with you. Congratulations on making it to the cool guy club of college football. My co-host is going to go home today incredibly jealous of you.
Hey, anytime, fellas. Appreciate you.
There we go. Good stuff from Parker Thune of On 3. On Oklahoma. He thinks Venables can get him to the mountaintop.
I mean, they came close last year. Defensively, he is not wrong. They are as good as anybody in the country. I ask about the offense because it was their issue last season. And you look at the first month and a half-ish of the season, from when we kick off to October 10th, they have a road game at Michigan, a road game at Georgia, and a home game against Texas. If you lose two of those three games, you're probably out of the playoff conversation. If you beat Michigan and then split the Georgia-Texas games, you're going to have a great shot because the schedule does ease up a little bit from there with Ole Miss and A&M in the back end of the season. The gauntlet right out of the gate is brutal for Oklahoma this year.
So you've got LSU 12, Texas Tech 11, BYU 10, and today, Oklahoma, number 9. We find out number 8 tomorrow on the Dirty Pool. A lot more to get into. We'll get into the Shaedon Sharpe injury at the top of the hour. We got a Mail Sack Tuesday. Let's get those Mail Sack questions in. We'll talk about Oregon State's starting quarterback announcement as well. Dirt and Sprague, we're back with more on 105.1 The Fan.
Have you ever felt like you were living just a B or B-plus life? It's so dangerous to live that, more dangerous than a B-minus or a C-plus life, because when you're living a B or B-plus life, you don't change it. You think it's good enough. Is it? I'm Susie Welch. I host a podcast called Becoming You. People think, okay, an A-plus life is not available to me, but there is a way. We are all in the process of becoming ourselves. Listen to Becoming You wherever you get your podcasts.
Shaedon Sharpe getting a bad injury yesterday. We'll talk about that coming up in the third hour of the radio program. It's a Mail Sack Tuesday. So we'll get to that in the final hour. 503-864-6326 as we roll on here. Good stuff from Parker Thune on Oklahoma. And the expectations for them coming into the season as they come in Venables with the extension and you've got Mateer back and they made the playoff last year and they blew the lead at home. And so you're like, hey, man, are they going to take that next step? Parker Thune continues to believe that they can go to the top of the mountaintop with Brent Venables. And so, you know, we'll just never do a live read. Why
How
find
we
anything
lose that?
We need? I don't know.
Don't worry. We can rip a lot of those up and throw them out here in a couple of days.
Well,
anyway, so
that's true.
A few
See you later.
A couple of papers short in the studio would be massive year for them, man. Like the idea of giving the extension. We talked about this yesterday. I get both sides of it, right? Like, let's be safe. He's our guy. He's loyal. He just got to the playoff. He also had 4 years left on his deal. And let me just play out a scenario. Now, I'm high on Oklahoma coming into this year. Me being high on a team doesn't mean squat. I was high on Iowa State last year, right? That's just a thought coming into the year. Let's say they lose that game week 2 to Michigan on the road. Michigan pulls an upset. Kyle Whittingham, first marquee game at Michigan. Their defense stifles Mateer. Their defense scores a touchdown. They win the game 17-13. It's ugly. All of a sudden, you're staring down the barrel of Georgia and Texas in the next two of the next three games. And if you lose another one of those, like, there is a world that exists that they start the season 2-3. That exists. And you just gave your coach a contract extension, and you might be 2-3 through your first five games. Now, I don't necessarily think that's going to happen. I think they're going to beat Michigan. I think they'll split the Georgia-Texas game. And if you do that, you're fine. Everything should be smooth sailing from there. But it's just funny how we have to always work ahead on this. We got to give extensions. Like, he had 4 years left on his deal. It wasn't going to expire. I didn't see necessarily the need for it at that time and place. And big year expectation-wise, because it had been very rocky the first couple of years for him there. Mm-hmm. Remember, it was a Dylan Gabriel year where they didn't quite make the playoff, but Gabriel was good. Gabriel then leaves, and they hand the job to Jackson Arnold, their five-star quarterback. The offense craters. The defense is still good. Uh-oh, we got to get better here. You bring in John Mateer, and you get to the college football playoff. And that was a great year for them. Now you got to go do it again, and it's not going to be easy with the schedule they have this year.
You know, I find college coaches, and I certainly know that people have the ones they think are the best, however many that is. But we've talked about a decent amount this offseason, the group of guys that haven't done the thing yet.
Right.
That might be able to.
That could at some point do it.
I don't have a reason to say no to it, but I also, like, when I asked Parker Thune, can Brent Venables get the guy, can he be the guy to get Oklahoma to the mountaintop? And he says, yeah. Again, I don't have a reason to not agree, but I also don't know. I have a really tough time gauging Oklahoma in this landscape. I know they have money. I know they're one of the more blue blood respected programs in college football in total.
Mm-hmm.
They're usually almost always competitive and in kind of the mix. But I don't know if I agree that I think Brent Venables can do it. But I also probably would have said this to you last year if you said, is Mario Cristobal the guy that's going to do it?
Probably the answer is no.
I don't know.
And
I
he came close.
No.
To be fair, he hasn't done it yet, but he came close. He's
well,
been closer
going
than
into
Venables.
Last year,
sure, yeah.
Right? Like, I don't know if I would have gone into last year with the idea that he was going to do it, whereas, like, maybe this is the new backup quarterback, former top pick bust who's getting the Sam Darnold, Geno Smith, maybe Kyler Murray this year. You can't say no or never. It's all about the Jimmys and the Joes, and does your schedule line up?
Right
and did
place,
you get the right,
right time.
Matchups in the playoff?
Like healthy when you needed to be.
Maybe that's what I need to be thinking about Brent Venables. I'm not super anti-Brent Venables.
No.
I also haven't been left with a lot of, like, great thoughts about Venables because I think largely they've been a little underwhelming. And then when they made the playoff, they blew, what was that lead? 17-3?
It was pretty sizable. They jumped all over Alabama.
They had all
the
momentum. They were at home.
At home,
they were pressuring Ty Simpson. The line couldn't block. And then
there was a play, I remember, like, did a guy drop a pass? Like, something, it was like a switch play. And it was like, would have been 24-3, but he dropped it. And then they ended up having a punt. And then Alabama scored. Or then they threw a pick six or whatever
it was. I want to say the ball was a little behind the receiver. And he was going through the middle.
They were up 17-0 in the second quarter.
17-0, and you lost that game.
They were outscored 34-7 the rest of the way. The irony
that's
of this
a huge lead to blow.
Yeah,
I mean,
dude,
in college
home,
football at least.
At
yeah.
home in a playoff game, it hurts. For a Bama team, by the way, that they had already beaten and certainly had their own flaws.
Yeah, they beat them in Alabama that
right,
year.
Right, they had already knocked them off. That's the reason Oklahoma mainly made the playoff last year. The funniest thing to me about the entire thing with Oklahoma, I'm with you with Venables. Like, his years, he's been in, this would be a fifth year at Oklahoma, okay? Him and Lanning are in the same cycle, him and Riley and Mario and all these guys. 6-7.
Yep.
Dylan Gabriel comes to town, 10-3, good little year. Lost the bowl game, so 10-2 in the regular season. 6-7, 10-3.
Yeah.
So it's been bad, good,
it's all about
bad,
quarterback
good.
Is.
And it's all about who is that quarterback.
He had
so,
Arnold and they couldn't do it.
It was
and then
terrible.
Had Gabriel, they could do it. And then got Mateer and they could do it.
I just think it's hilarious to see a program who has got the absolute inverse of the coach that they had before. They hired a guy, and I don't know if you'd say he's the scariest defensive mind. Like, I, you know, he's certainly in the conversation as one of the best defensive minds in the sport. Their defense statistically for the last 4 years has been damn good.
He helped win,
and it's going to be awesome again this year.
At Clemson.
It's just hilarious to come from Lincoln Riley, who couldn't, you know, every playoff game he'd be in, he'd give up 75 points, and they lose 75-63.
Yep.
And now they have a coach who doesn't have an offense, but his defense is dominant. It's just the exact opposite, and they still are looking for a way to get over the hump.
Is he a coach you would class? Let me ask you this, and we'll go to the Shade and Sharp news. We'll get back into college football. Oregon State named their starter. If he won a national championship before Dan Lanning, would that is that disappointing to you?
No, not Oklahoma's a big program. They're recruiting at a top three level. Like, okay. I'm not going to pick it to happen this year. I think they're going to be really good. I don't know if they're national championship good offensively.
But, like, I'm asking what coach wins the title before Dan Lanning, and you go, damn, dude, really, that guy? Because I think he might be one for me. I think he is a good recruiter. He obviously knows defense, but...
Yeah. I don't think he's quite in that category, but I see the argument that you're making.
Who's one you'd put in the category?
Lincoln Riley. If he found a way to get his... And that's a rivalry, but also, like, if he finally figured out a way to get his defense together to the point where he could win a national championship, good enough at the line of scrimmage play to do it, that would hurt. Okay. That one would hurt.
All right. Good to know. A lot more to get into in the third hour. It is a Mail Sack Tuesday, so get those questions in at 503-864-6326. We'll get to the Mail Sack coming up in the final hour of the radio program.
Mail Sack!
So we start the third hour. Shaden Sharp down and out. Not good news. And this person has this to say about our Blazers. Get to that. Hour three on The Fan.
Hey, gang, it's Jill Schlesinger. I'm launching a new show. It's called Money Moves, and we are going to move. We are going to answer your financial questions and take the mystery out of your financial life. Follow and listen wherever you get your podcasts.